This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Time now for the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. And now, here she is, the smart, the sexy, the savvy, Divine Miss C.
And welcome to the show. Now, I love to do shows about consumer advocacy, and today I have Florida attorney John DuBeld with me, and we're going to talk about the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, also called the TCPA, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, called the FDCPA, and the Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act, the FCCPA, because we're in Florida. Now, all three of these statutes protect consumers from harassing collection calls. And in many instances, consumers, it's possible that they might be awarded monetary damages for these violations. So John's not going to be giving you legal advice today, but he's going to be giving out educational, you know, information so that you can listen to it. So I want to welcome you to the show, John.
Hey, how's it going, Lori? Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to have you here. And I'd like you to share a little bit, John, about your professional history and, you know, discuss what types of law you practice.
So initially, I started at the Assistant United States Attorney's Office in Tampa, Florida. I worked on some white-collar crimes while there. After that, I joined the Smarty folks in Hassenbassett, and I ran the Consumer Protection Department there for a little while. And then recently, about a year ago, I took over the Consumer Protection Department here at Berkowitz & Meyer in St. Petersburg, Florida. So I focus mainly on consumer protection. So those three statutes that you listed,
right,
those are the bread and butter.
All right, well, let's go over a little bit on each one. Maybe you can give me kind of a summary on each one of those acts.
Absolutely. So the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, the TCPA, it covers consumers from auto-dialed, automated calls, essentially computerized calls to consumer cell phones. It also deals with calls from landlines, but in the majority of cases, we're dealing with cell phone calls. So whenever you're receiving automated calls or pre-recorded messages to your cell phone, that's when that statute comes into play. There's a lot more that goes into it, and we'll dive into that, but essentially, if you're receiving automated calls to your cell phone, there's potentially a TCPA violation there. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, also known as the FDCPA, it deals with calls to your cell phone. It deals with calls to your home phone. It also deals with written correspondence. But for today's purposes, we'll discuss how it affects calls to you as a consumer in general. It has nothing to do with whether the calls are automated or not. So, you know, if you have a collection company or a creditor that's calling your cell phone or home phone, it has protections that are set out to protect you as a consumer.
Okay.
And then lastly, the Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act, also known as the FCCPA, it's the same as the FDCPA. It's just a sister state statute. So any calls to your cell phone or to your home line, there's laws that protect you from being harassed, essentially. So that's what the FDCPA and the FCCPA deal with, and the TCPA dealing with automated calls.
Okay, the FDCPA is a federal law, but the FCCPA is a state law. So I'm assuming other states, probably a lot of them, have their own state laws as well.
Yes, there are, not all, but for instance, California has a very similar statute to Florida's, and other states do. But there are some states out there that don't have a state statute. So
then they have to use that.
If you're not in Florida, you'd have to check that out. But Florida definitely has very very strong laws out there that protect consumers from call harassment, essentially.
Okay, now how did these laws come into existence?
So the FDCPA and the FCCPA are a little older than TCPA. I think the FDCPA originated back in the 70s. And it's just dealing with abusive, unfair debt collection practices. Consumers are being, you know, threatened with jail time and that sort of stuff. Same with the FCCPA, and they were, you know, federally it was enacted to protect against debt collectors. Debt collector being a third party collector. The FCCPA actually protects. It goes a step further, and it protects consumers from any person. That's what the statute states. So if someone regularly collects debts from a consumer, they are bound by the FCCPA. Meaning, for instance, if you have a credit card company that's calling you, they're not going to be held to the FDCPA because they're not a debt collector per se. They are collecting on their own debt. However, that's where the FCCPA jumps in. You know, if they're harassing you via, you know, call harassment, that's when the FCCPA jumps in and protects consumers. So
I got
and then
you.
Finally the TCPA. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, that's all right. I got you. So the FDCPA basically is for against collection agencies, but the FCCPA,
yes.
the state law, will protect you from anyone who's claiming to be a debt collector, including original creditors.
Yep, original creditors and debt collectors are bound by the FCCPA, whereas the FDCPA is just a third-party collection company, meaning your debt has to have gone into default, you know, i.e. into collections, in order for that third party to be bound by the FDCPA, where the FCCPA, it doesn't matter if your debt is in collections or not. If a credit card company, a car loan company, your mortgage company is calling you and harassing you, they are bound by the FCCPA.
Okay. Now, talking about the – let me ask you first. What made you decide to go into this area of law?
There's just a need for it, to be honest. To be completely frank, there's many people I've talked to don't even know these statutes exist. When I get these kind of calls, you know, look, I'm being harassed. And then I tell them about – I tell potential clients about these three statutes. They're amazed, quite frankly. And the icing on the cake for the FDCPA and the FCCPA is these two statutes provide for attorney's fees to be paid for by the company that is in violation of the law. So, you know, these consumers never going to have to pay any attorney's fees. It's the icing on the cake. They get paid – separately by the company in violation. So that's what makes it really, really great. It promotes these kind of, you know, these lawsuits, these protections to consumers. Otherwise, there'd be more of a chilling effect, right? If these consumers who are having trouble paying their own debts have to worry about paying attorney fees as well, well, that wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't tend to work out too much, because they're going to think, you know, if I can't pay my own debt, how am I going to be able to afford an attorney? So
right.
When I tell these clients, potential clients, look, you know, this is how it works, they're shocked most of the time. They had no clue. And so that's how I got into this area of the law. It's just there's a big need, because the reality is this: majority of people have some form of debt, you know. So it's and it's easy to get behind on bills, whether you have an injury or you lose your job, and you know, these kind of calls will start. It's inevitable. So there's a need for these kind of consumer protection attorneys. There's a big need for these attorneys out there, for sure.
You know, I know a lot about this topic, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because people sometimes they don't understand how it works, and they can become hysterical. You know, someone's knocking on their door, a debt collector, you know, is knocking on their door, or a debt collector is threatening them with legal action, or calling them names. You're a liar. You're a cheater. You're a thief. You stole the money, and some of them will curse obscenities. And so people don't realize, and they're intimidated, and, you know, then it makes them hysterical, like, oh, my God. And then, of course, they don't want to answer the calls, or they block it, or worse, sometimes they pay it, and it might not even be a valid debt. What are some of the other things you could talk about with either the FDCPA or the FCCPA that people should know that, you know, they're protected? They just have to know what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So every single scenario you just listed, I've dealt with. First thing I always tell all my clients is you need to take these people off the block number. You need to answer these calls. And that's for the simple fact that, you know, you answer these calls, If you can't afford the debt, you simply tell them that, look, I lost my job. I have an injury. You know, I can't afford it. I'm past due. I just simply can't afford to pay the debt. You tell them that, and you tell them to please stop calling. And if you do that a few times and you establish a pattern and they continue to call, well, guess what? Now they're on the hook for harassment. And depending on whether they're an original creditor or a debt collector, they could be violating one or both of the statutes. So, you know, that's the most important thing. And a lot, I'd say the majority of clients I speak to, right, they block these numbers. They don't want to deal with it. Well, in order to address the issue, you actually have to take these calls and, you know, tell them essentially, stop calling me. You know, I can't afford to pay the debt because of X, Y, or Z. Once you do that, you know, you most likely have a case. You know, I mean, it has to happen, and there's no clear-cut, you know, rule out there which says, you know, once I've answered three or four calls, and I then have a cause of action under the FDCPA or FCCPA, and you know, that gets a little more detailed. But essentially, it comes down to how frequently are they calling, what they say when they call, and so forth. But you have to hit these things head on. Otherwise, you know, the calls will continue, and you're not going to be able to do anything about it. So,
you know,
as far as getting threatened.
Yep.
Getting name called. That with the legitimate companies, and that's a big issue, is whether a company is legitimate or illegitimate, mainly with debt collectors. But that kind of stuff doesn't happen too often anymore. It's not like the Wild Wild West. And once these laws, you know, once these companies have been sued a few times, they change their protocol. You know, they abide by the laws. But it happens, but it's very rare to see name calling and stuff like that, because those are serious violations. I mean, I've pursued a couple of those cases, and they're pretty substantial. But it doesn't happen too often that I see in my practice, at least.
Right. Well, so. I think some companies are in the industry are more notorious for violating laws than other companies are. There's always the bad apples, you know, so to speak. But
absolutely.
But people should also a debt collector has to, I believe, announce what company they are and that they are recording the call. Correct.
Yes, their company, and that it's an attempt to collect the debt. I get a lot of those cases where, for instance, you miss a call from a collector, right? They leave a voicemail and they say, this is, you know, John Doe calling from, even if they state their company, let's just say, I'm calling from Portfolio Recovery, please give us a call back. Well, listen, if they don't tell you why they're calling, so, you know, it's called the mini Miranda under the FDCPA, if they don't tell you they're calling and an attempt to collect a debt, well, then that's a violation in and of itself, which, you know, puts them on the hook under the FDCPA. Under the FCCPA, so the state statute, because they're not considered a debt collector, they don't have to state that stuff. But, you know, that's one of the many violations that frequently occurs that I see, that I pursue. So another one being, you know, they don't list for FDCPA purposes, that they don't list the name of the company, that could potentially be a violation in and of itself as well.
Right. I mean, some of these companies are sneaky. I'll just tell you a brief story. It's probably 2 or 3 years ago. I received a phone call for a next door neighbor. Now, what I don't think people realize is a lot of these companies, these collection agencies, skip trace, and they're able to gain access to, like, who your neighbors are or who you work for.
Absolutely.
Or who your other half is. And so this person didn't just – all they said was, I need to speak to insert name of person here. And I said, I'm the neighbor. If you want me to relate a call, then you need to tell me what it's about, who you are, and what the phone number is, and I will leave them a message. And so, believe it or not, the person actually said that they were calling to collect a debt for this person and disclosed everything, but I knew how it worked, so I wrote it down. And at that point, I gave the information to that person, and they contacted an attorney. Because I think typically what happens for you is if the call is being recorded, and you might not even have to file a lawsuit if you know the offending firm's attorney, right? I mean, you don't even have to go to discovery, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
You could just pull the phone log, and they listen, right? And they go, oops, we screwed up, and we're going to pay you, and we're going to pay, you know, your client and pay your fees and maybe take it off their credit report to top it off.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The scenario you just described is a violation Potentially, under the FDCPA for disclosing to a third party another one's debt, so your neighbor would have a cause of action in that instance. They could as well have a cause of action under the state law, too. There's a similar, you know, it goes to reputation, disclosing to someone outside the family. So, yeah, that would be a pretty strong case, and you're right. Once you've been doing this for a little while, you build up relationships with these debt collectors, firms that they use. I would say at this point, I don't know, maybe 50% of my cases I get resolved in a pre-suit matter. The other 50 I have to file, you know, a lawsuit. But it definitely helps when you have these connections, you know, because it expedites the process, right?
Right.
If they know they screwed up, then 9 times out of 10, they're going to want to get the case settled without the need for litigation. So that's always nice to know who these debt collectors use to defend them. Absolutely.
Now, John, what happens, like, in any of these TCPA or FDCPA or FCCPA, if the offending company is not in Florida, for example, we're here in Florida, and you got to file mm-hmm. suit, what happens? Do they have attorneys on retainer in every single state? Because it happens frequently. They have to go out and hire an attorney to be on the opposite side of you. What happens?
So you mean if the debt collection company is not based out of Florida?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, no, any of these companies are going to have, most of them have in-house counsel, the big ones. Then they'll have local counsel, but then, you know, they'll have a firm on retainer. For instance, if the lawsuit's based out of, let's just say, Tampa, they're going to have a firm that they've used out of Tampa that, you know, if a lawsuit gets filed, they're in, let's just say, Chicago, you know, Illinois, they're going to have someone that regularly handles their cases in Tampa. That's
okay.
It's a no-brainer. It happens all the time, so.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If people, and I hope people who listen to the show learn something so that if it happens to them, they know that they are protected and it's not going to cost them anything, which is really the kicker. I mean, they can
yep.
certainly say stop calling. They can send a cease and desist letter, say stop, you know, stop calling, just send me, you know, proof of the debt, something like that. But that does not always work. And, you know, I'm sure you must get cases.
Absolutely not. It doesn't.
Yeah.
But And to expand on that, a lot of these companies, their policies and procedures are, look, we're going to continue to call you until you send us a written cease and desist. And that's not proper. Once you verbally tell someone, look, stop calling, if you have a reason, that's even better. But once you tell them to stop calling, you know, and it can't be once or twice, like I mentioned earlier, but if you can establish a pattern, so I like to get at least 4 or 5 times where you've told them, then the argument is essentially, look, I told you to stop calling. I told you why, and you're continuing to call me. Therefore, you know, we allege harassment under the FDCPA, and then if the FCCPA is, if that's the cause of action as well, it's the same argument. So, but a lot of them think that a written cease and desist is required, and that's absolutely not the case. Now, for purposes of the TCPA, revocation is the most important thing when it comes to that. So what happens is, you know, if you go and get a car loan, right, or you get a mortgage, majority of people have cell phones nowadays, so they put their cell phone number down, right? They put it on the contract, the application. That allows a car loan company or a mortgage company initially to auto dial, robocall, however you want to, you know, whatever you want to call
right.
it, computerized call your cell phone. That allows them to do that. When they have to stop is when a consumer says, you know, stop calling my cell phone. That verbal revocation in and of itself makes that company, whoever it is, they then have to stop computerized calling your cell phone from that moment forward. And if they don't, it's $500 to $1,500 per call. $500 is based off negligence, and $1,500 per call is based off if they knowingly and or willfully violate the TCPA. So my procedure is I tell clients, look, you answer as many calls as you can, and you tell them to stop calling your cell phone, because that gives you a stronger argument to go after $1,500 per call, right? If there's right. 10 instances where you told a company, and I've had cases like this, where, you know, 10 times you've told a company, look, stop calling my cell phone, I can't afford to pay the debt for whatever reason, that's a strong, strong case for willfulness, because they know that they're using an auto dialer to call you, and if you revoke consent on, you know, not even 10 times, but, you know, let's say 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, whatever, it just, the more you do it, the stronger your case is, essentially. So, I just want to touch on, go ahead.
I was going to ask you real quick, would it be a good idea, like if someone's getting these types of calls, that they document the calls and possibly take a photo of, you know, the display, you know what I'm saying, on their phone to basically
you hit it on the head, absolutely. That's okay. What I tell all my clients to do. I even provide call logs to make it even easier for consumers or my clients. You document these calls. You write down, it's pretty straightforward. You write down the date, time, the number that was called, you know, in a brief description of what was said. That way, when I go to file a lawsuit in front of me, and it gives more teeth to your lawsuit, essentially, rather than just saying, I told them to stop calling. Well, when you're more specific and you have more concrete facts in front of you, it definitely goes a long way. One other thing I just wanted to touch on real quick with the TCPA. So the TCPA, sometimes these cases, well, not sometimes, but a lot of times these cases can get very lucrative. Once you get into the 100 calls, 200 calls, 300 calls, I mean, you're looking at easy six-figure cases. I mean, that's just the reality. The way we operate at Berkowitz & Meyer, and the way, you know, 99% of the consumer protection firms out there operate, is the consumer or client takes 60% of whatever we recover for TCPA purposes, and the firm takes 40, so it's contingent-based.
Okay.
And it has to be like that, because there's no, as you know, as in the FDCPA and FCCPA, there's a attorney fee provision, right? So I'm getting paid for by the debt collector or creditor. In the TCPA, that doesn't provide for a fee shift, an attorney fee provision. So you have to, it's contingent based. But
it reminds me almost of personal, it's like personal injury in a way, though. The same, it works the same way, because it is an injury, technically, right?
It is. It is, yeah. It's definitely an injury. And the whole purpose of the TCPA was to stop these, initially it was telemarketing calls, right? But the whole rhyme and reason for the TCPA is because consumers were getting charged for these calls, right? They're eating up minutes.
Right.
Now, most times now, a lot of people have, they have unlimited minutes or whatever, so they may not specifically be getting charged, but it's still around. It's still good law, and there's so many cases out there where, you know, consumers have received a high volume of calls, and they've made out very, very well. You know, I've had a few already that have been pretty lucrative, and I have a few more right now, specifically that are filed and look like they're going to be very, very lucrative. So, can it be annoying to document some of these calls? Absolutely, but it's definitely worth the time and effort to put it in the front end, because consumers can make out well and turn the tables on these harassing phone calls.
Now, does it teach the company a lesson when they have to pay out to the consumer, or does it teach them a lesson monetarily, because it's a monetary punishment, or is it because there are so few people that know about this that it's just, you know, a company paying out, they lose such a small amount of their income, you know, it may be 1%, they're still making 99%, and yet they continue to do the same thing? Or do you think it actually stops those companies and say, something's wrong here, maybe we better, you know, comply with the law?
Yeah, so I would answer that question. It can go both ways. There's been numerous companies that have been hit with TCPA lawsuits that have been actually put out of business, you know. Those are the smaller companies, right? But then you have big banks, and, you know, I'm not going to name any specifically,
okay,
but let's just say this, the majority of mortgage companies and big banks, they auto-dial. They use computerized calling because they have such a big client base, right? They kind of just look at it as a business practice. It's almost like an ante in poker, right? Look, this is the risk we take when we do this, but the risk or the reward outweighs the risk, essentially, and they don't change their policies. And another reason they don't change their policies is because these the software and systems that they're using to auto-dial, in order to change over to a something that complies with TCPA, is extremely expensive. You know, it's not cheap. So they look at it that way. It's more just a risk analysis that they perform. But to answer your question, some companies try to change over. Some say, you know, look, it's a risk that we take and we understand it. And then some just get put out of business. I mean, it's happened numerous times.
So. Yeah, it sounds to me almost like robbery. Like I could go to 10 houses and rob all of them, and maybe one will slap me on the wrist, you know. But it's good for people to listen to this. So I don't want you to go anywhere. We have more to go. So stay with us. Back in a moment.
Consumers, do you have bad credit? Can't purchase a house or car? Paying too much in interest on your credit cards and loans? Scammed by credit repair companies? There is hope. You can get back on track and do it the right way. Call Credit Education Consultants today at 813-500-6064. That's 813-500-6064. Or go to crediteducationconsultants.com now and get the help you need. Don't delay. Call today. Mortgage reps and realtor inquiries are also welcomed.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry. Providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more, call Central Payment's James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payment's James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
And welcome back to the world of Lori Zook. I've been speaking with attorney John Dubeld about the Telephone Consumer Practice Protection Act, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and the Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act. That's a whole mouthful, John. And so I want to go on. that's a lot of big acts. But basically, these are all acts designed to protect consumers from the auto dialing or from debt collection practices that are not legal, that people don't know about. And so, you know, on the commercial break, we were talking a little bit about cap damages and actual damages. And can you explain what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So under the TCPA, there is no cap, right? There's a range. There's $500 per call to $1,500 per call, depending on if it's a negligent call or a willful call. So, I mean, there's been cases where there's been over $1 million in recovery for TCPA purposes. That's probably never going to happen in an FDCPA or an FCCPA claim, and that's simply because the statutory damages under those two statutes are capped at up to $1,000, meaning if they call and harass you under each statute, okay, the most you can get as a consumer is up to $1,000. Now, there's what's called actual damages as well. Actual damages, I'll give you an example just so I can explain it better. If you get a collection call at work, and I actually have a case going on like that right now that I just filed, where you get a collection call at work and you get fired because of the call, mm-hmm. That would be an example of an actual damages because you lost your job. Okay. Now, there's no cap on actual damages as well. You know, it's whatever a judge or jury determines, okay? So there's been instances where, you know, $500 or $1,000 has been awarded in actual damages. There's been instances and cases where $250,000 in actual damages have been awarded. So, but for the majority of FDCPA and FCCPA cases, you're looking at up to $1,000 in statutory damages. That's normally the what is awarded or what is agreed to in settlement. And then, of course, your attorney's fees are paid for as well.
All right. Now, touch on some of the TCPA exemptions.
So I would say the biggest one that just came about last year, 2015, was the federal student loan exemption. Basically, any government-backed loans that you may have as a consumer are, as of now, exempt from the TCPA, meaning debt collection companies can call you, robotically call you, computerized call you on your cell phone as much as they want, and not be bound by the TCPA. And it's a shame. It really is. Now, they still could be harassing you, right? You still may be entitled to an FDCPA or an FCCPA claim, but you're not going to get the $500 to $1,500 per call because they're federally backed loans.
So it's the government is exempt from its own rules, right?
Yes, that's straight from the government. That's nothing, you know. And there's a big fight going on with that right now. They're trying to get that overturned, which, you know, obviously as a consumer attorney, I don't think that should be allowed. You know, I don't think you should be able to robo-dial someone's cell phone as much as you'd like. If you want to contact them, you know, there's other means. There's email. There's written correspondence. So that's the big one, big one right now. Now, private loans are still, you know, they're still held to the TCPA. So any private loans that you have, because you can have private loans, for instance, like Navient. Navient is a big loan holder. I've sued them numerous times. And so they may have some federal loans and they may have some of your private loans. So if they're calling you in regards to private loans and they're auto-dialing you, which they do, they could be subject to the TCPA. But if they're calling about federal student loans, they're exempt. The other exemption that I want to touch on real quickly is the wireless carrier exemption. Basically what that says is your cell phone provider is allowed to auto-dial your cell phone. I don't really understand it. I don't get it. I don't think it should be allowed, but it's something that I just found out in a recent case of mine. So it's out there as well. So those are the two that I've come across a lot. Now there's more that deal with landlines, but you know, majority of people nowadays don't even have landlines. Most people have cell phones, but I'll just give you one example. It's the business line exemption. So if they're calling you and they tie up a business line because they're auto dialing you, then they potentially could be on the hook for the TCPA. But majority of TCPA claims deal with cell phone calls.
Okay, I got a question that might stump you, John, which is, what if you have like for example, these the phone providers. When you have services, for example, like Verizon, I don't know if they still have it, it's called Home Connect. And so it's considered by them to be a landline, but yet it's really not a landline. There's no hard wiring. It's a wireless system, and what it does is their box connects to your regular landline. But the line itself is really wireless. Do you know if that would qualify then under any of these laws for wireless calls inbound?
Yes, so I think I've dealt with that in the past, and don't quote me on it, but if it's technically a landline and it's not eating up potential cell phone minutes,
gotcha.
I think they aren't bound by the TCPA, but don't quote me on that. I know I've dealt with it. It was a couple of years ago, though, so it's not fresh in my memory. But
it's a gray area.
I think if it's forwarded, I know what you're talking about. It's like a Google Voice, whatever. If it's forwarded to your cell phone, I think if it's technically a landline, then you know, even if it's forwarded to your cell phone, I don't think it falls under the purview of the TCPA.
Okay. Now I know Lee had a question for you. He was talking to me. We were talking to us on the commercial break. Lee, why don't you ask him your question?
Well, bottom line, what can you do about, you know, if you've put your number, your landline on that do not call list, and people are calling anyway? What kind of recourse is there on a situation
so the whole,
like that?
And I know we previously discussed that a little bit, but the whole do not call list, it's basically a pointless registry. I get that a lot from clients. Well, I'm on the do not call list, and I tell them that's great, but that doesn't really mean much of anything. you have to really revoke consent to the specific party, right? So mortgage company calling you and you say, oh, mama, do not call us. Well, guess what? If you put your cell phone number or and or your home phone number on your contract, your application, guess what? That gives them, there's case law that says, you know, they then have the right to auto dial, call you all they want until you revoke consent. And another thing that brings up that I want to touch about, which is a big, big issue, is illegitimate companies. Okay, I probably get, I don't know, 10 calls a week where I have a very irritated client who's saying, look, I'm getting a bunch of these calls, and they're saying they're going to do this, they're saying they're going to do that. And, you know, what I do is I look into, you know, who's calling. I normally get the number and the name, and majority of the time when I get those calls, it's an illegitimate or scam company. It could be, and this is true, it could be two guys working out of a basement that found out that you had a debt that's way old, and they skip traced your number, they got your number somehow, and they're calling and trying to collect the debt from you, most of the time illegally, right? A lot of people will, like you said earlier, Lori, they'll panic and they may pay. You know, they may pay.
Right, because they're afraid.
Because they're scared.
Let me ask you, I got to jump in here. And, if they pay on that debt because they were intimidated, is it too late for them to call you and say, hey, you know, they did this call to me and that's why I paid, but now I heard about it. Is it too late at that point, or is there potential to come back and win?
If it's an illegitimate company, most likely, because the reality is this, I could file lawsuits all day long, but getting someone to answer a lawsuit or trying to collect money from two guys in a basement, good luck. You know what I mean? Like the saying goes, you can't get blood from a turnip. So it's just, unfortunately, I have to tell a lot of these people, look, you know, and that's one of the times when I'll say, look, put them on the do not call list, you know, avoid their calls, tell them, you know, I educate clients and I tell them, look, let them know that you spoke to an attorney, that you already know they're not legitimate. They're never going to get any money from you, so stop calling. And a lot of the times that'll help to stop the calls, because once a scam company knows, okay, look, this person obviously knows, let's move on to the next. That a lot of times that'll happen. So, you know, I can help them out that way, but in trying to collect money or suing these companies, There's not much I can do in that situation, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I know telemarketers are supposed to scrub their lists and look at the do not call, and there are computer programs that say take these numbers off their list, but none of them do it. And I can tell you that I'm going to tell you at least either once a year or every 2 years, I register all the phone numbers, you know, the home phone, the cell phone. I put everything on that do not call list. I also keep a copy of that, you know, which I don't think a lot of people do. I keep a copy. But, John, I will tell you, my phones ring, my landline at home rings all day long. Now, I know that there are exceptions like charities or politicians. Let me tell you, the political stuff is seriously crazy. And I don't even use really that home phone. But calls come through all the time. I get scammers like once a month. This is your credit card company calling. We're calling to update your credit profile. Please press 1 and you will be connected. Meantime, they don't identify who they are. And right away, that's a thing that it's a scammer. You know, the IRS ones, too. The IRS doesn't call you. They send a certified return receipt letter. So I get calls like that,
absolutely,
too. And some of them are kind of scary.
Yeah, I have no problem talking to clients when they're getting these calls, because they don't know, right? So it helps when you have an attorney tell you, look, don't worry about it. You know, there's nothing that I can't do much for you, but it gives them peace of mind to know that, look, okay, this is illegitimate. I don't need to worry about it. Block the number and go about your day. But as far as being able to sue these companies, it's just
right.
It doesn't happen.
It's difficult,
so,
and you know,
unfortunately,
I'm a little bit different, I think, than most people. I take the phone number sometimes if it's repeated, and I will type it into Google, and I'll see what comes up, because there will be lists that sometimes tell you, you know, the caller is a scam. They're trying to sell you vacation time, whatever it is.
Yep.
But the hard part, I actually saved one for you, John, that I'll give to you after the show. But I've gotten two calls. I've saved one. And the company is saying they're calling from a major hotel chain, and it's a local mm-hmm. Tampa number. Now, I have not called them back, but it's the second time that they've called, and I'm on the do not call list. So what do I do? I mean, if someone answers...
Is it to your landline or your cell phone?
It's to my cell phone. It's saved on my cell phone the second time.
Is it robotic, pre-recorded,
yes.
automated?
Yes.
Okay. So what I would do is I would try to find out who the company is.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you need to revoke consent. That's the most important thing. There's a possibility they had permission to call your cell phone to begin with. Maybe not. Maybe they skip traced your number, right? If that's the case, then you could potentially have a TCPA claim against them if they're legitimate. One thing I want to point out, big difference between TCPA and FDCPA and FDCPA. The TCPA deals with just automated calls in general, right?
Okay, right.
It doesn't have to be debt-related, collection call-related. The FDCPA and FCCPA, the calls have to be for collection purposes. They have to be in an attempt to collect a debt. So that's something that needs to be delineated, and consumers need to know that. You know, sometimes you may be getting robocalls from, like you said, timeshares or something like that. I just had a case, a timeshare case where, you know, they were getting calls and I was able to help them out. But for FDCPA and FCCPA purposes, they have to be in regards to debt. So you could have a TCPA claim and an FDCPA and FCCPA claim. You could have solely an FDCPA and FCCPA claim, and you can have just solely a TCPA claim, right?
There's different.
It just depends what the purpose of the call is, essentially.
Now, what do you do, though, if you can't, if this call was local, that's one thing. But a lot of the calls that I get, I'm sure a lot of people get, are from out of state, and you can't, even if you reverse Google them, you can't track them. Should a person still keep a record of those auto-dial calls, and then they turn it over to you? How do you then find out who that company is? Is there a way to do that?
First thing I do is I call back the number.
Okay.
I call back the number. I do exactly what you said, Lori. First thing I do is I call the number. Okay. If that doesn't get me anywhere, I do what you were saying. I look them up on Google. But I can tell you, majority of these offenders, you're going to know who they are, the ones that you can collect from, at least. If it's some small company working out of, you know, Wyoming or something, it's going to be extremely difficult to recover anything. Because, you know, it's just, unless they've been sued in the past, I should mention that. The last thing I do is I pull them up on the federal docket, okay, it's called PACER, and I see, okay, has this company been sued in the past? If they have, fantastic, then it's game on, right?
Right.
Okay, let's see what's happened here, how many calls, and go from there. If they haven't, that's a good indicator that they're not legitimate, right? So that's one of the tools that I use is I see if they've been sued in the past, and that helps me a lot in many cases.
So if it's a scammer, that's a real scammer that you can't track them down, and it's probably some bogus company, your best option is probably just to use an app to block it off your cell phone so that it won't accept the call.
Yeah, that's what I advise, because if they're legitimate, if I have a client who provides me with numbers and calls, and I do my due diligence, and I see that, okay, look, this company has never been sued. They're not. Another thing I do is I see if they're registered in Florida on Sunbiz, right? Are they registered to conduct business within the state of Florida? If so, that's another. Okay, then I'll consider it because they're registered, right?
Right.
Illegitimate companies, they won't be registered on Sunbiz to conduct business. They won't be sued federally. Or in state court.
Right, right.
And so it'll be very difficult to obtain. Their contact information and the name of the company and so forth. So
right, because Sunbiz is in Florida, but in if you're in another state, you would look in your Department of Corporations for that state to find out how you look up the company names.
Business search. Yep.
Right. Now if I'm doing business with like my credit card company, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to let you answer it. Are they allowed to call me, you know, continuously and solicit me by phone with special offers, or can I opt out?
Oh, no, you should be able to opt out. But again, if it's auto-dialed, majority of the time, auto-dial calls are allowed until you revoke consent, okay? And revocation is as simple as saying verbally, stop calling my cell phone. Once you do that, if they call you after that with automated calls to your cell phone, you have a TCPA claim. Okay,
it's
that simple. Some companies think that And I can think of one in particular. It's a big mortgage company. They think that, no, you know, you have to write us and tell us, you know, a written cease and desist in order for the calls to stop. That's not accurate, you know. So they continuously violate all these statutes. And, you know, I've had quite a few lawsuits against them. They've been hit many, many times. And they're one of the companies that I mentioned earlier that they don't care. They're going to continue to do it. And I'm talking about six-figure judgments against them pretty regularly.
Yeah, but they're probably making billions of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To them, it's like, okay, they make $100 million a quarter. What's $1 million or $2 million in you know, attorney's fees and damages to consumers? Right. That's the way they look at it. They look at it from a business perspective. So.
Gotcha. Now, I was actually going to go through the list, but we're not going to have time because I want to cover some other things here. But if somebody feels that their rights have been violated, how do you make the determination that they can sue? I'm assuming that you have a consultation with them. They, you know, if they've written things down, they show you pictures. But what's the final kicker?
I just do my due diligence. Like I told you, I first of all, I do free consultations. Over the phone, majority of the time, or in person. Over the phone seems to be more convenient with people. Right. I kind of feel them out, see what's been going on. If they have documentation, that's fantastic because then I can jump on it and see what's been going on. But majority of the time, I get calls and, you know, I get the, well, I'm getting these calls from company X, and I say, okay, well, this is what you need to do. And then, you know, we correspond back and forth. We keep track of what's going on, and then I finally determine when I think lawsuit is ready to go. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. But, you know, for instance, if they're getting robocalls, automated calls to their cell phone, and we know they revoke consent on X date, it's smart to let that claim build because the more calls they get, the more in potential damages they're going to be awarded. So, I do free consultations all the time, over the phone, in person, over email, you know, however.
Right.
So that's how I operate.
Yeah, you made a good point that I want to bring out. You basically brought up that an educated customer an educated consumer is actually the best consumer and best client for you, because if they know, then they're not going to be so upset when they get these calls. They're just going to remain quiet and say, you know, don't call anymore. They're going to notate it. They're going to keep a screenshot or a photo of what's happening on the phone. They're just going to let that build up. And then eventually they come to you and say, hey, I've got 10 calls. I've got 50 calls. Let me show you all the proof that I have. That makes your case a lot easier. So what's the legal process once you've determined the consumer has a case? You then either are contacting the company, the offending company directly, if you know them, to try and settle out. And then if not, then you're going to file suit in court. Correct?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it depends on the amount of calls we're talking about. It depends on if we're just talking about FDCPA and FCCPA. I try to get those settled quickly because there's not much damages I can recover for a consumer, right? Whereas if we're talking about a TCPA case, for instance, I have one, you know, right now that's companies aren't going to just settle that case out. When you're talking about six figures in damages, they're going to pay a defense firm to defend the case. It's that simple. So you have to file a lawsuit, and you know it takes time, but that's the process that you have to go in order to recover that kind of money. So
okay, and now I guess this is the hardest question to ask, and I'm sure people ask you this all the time. How long does it take to settle out a case? And I know you probably really can't answer that, but maybe give an example of a simple case versus a more complicated case. You know, and you don't have to give names, but you know, I'm sure you've had simple ones and then you've had the really hard ones.
For instance, it's all based off the company, right? How hard they want to defend it, how much money they want to defend or pay a defense firm, and it depends on the merits of the case, right? So if you have someone that told them to stop calling 5 times, or 10 times, you know, and they know they're on the hook, and they're probably going to want to get it settled. But I just had a case that I filed. It was about 75 calls. It went on for, I think, 3 months from the time I filed. Well, so the case built to get 75 calls, right? That took about 2 or 3 months.
Right.
We filed a lawsuit, and then took about another 2 or 3 months to finally resolve it. So, I mean, if you're talking about TCPA cases where there's quite a few calls, you're going to have to litigate the case for, I would say, at minimum 2 to 3 months, at minimum. Now, if you're talking about 100, 200 calls, some of these companies will take it all the way to jury trial, I mean, on damages, because you're talking the difference between $500 per call and $1,500 per call. So, if you know, you do the math there, you know, if that's 3 to 1, right? If, and
yeah.
You multiply that times 100 calls, that gets really, really expensive. So I can't really answer that, but majority of the strong cases settle pretty quickly. I guess that's what I would leave it at. I mean, I would say 3 to 6 months is a good time frame on a pretty strong, straightforward TCPA case.
Okay, now we got about 2 minutes left. So, you know, I'm surprised that these companies don't learn a lesson, take it to jury trial when they just don't do the right thing to begin with. That's always my, you know, I think that companies and people, because it's people that run companies, should live to a certain standard. And so if there are laws that protect them, these are companies that are taking advantage of people, taking advantage of consumers, and then they're hedging their bet as to, you know, most people don't know anything about it, therefore they win. You know, if they're trying to collect money, they're going to get the money, even if it's past the statute of limitations for collection. People just don't know. And so they need to do some due diligence, the consumers do, to find out, hey, what rights do I have? I mean, really, it's as simple as a Google search. You know, you've given tremendously great information here. Can you give me or give our listeners your contact information in case anybody would like to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. I just want to touch on the statute of limitations real quick. So for TCPA purposes, and this is extremely important, you have 4 years from the time the first infraction occurred. Okay. For FDCPA purposes, you have 1 year. Okay, and for FCCPA purposes, the state statute, you have 2 years. So those are extremely important dates to know. My name again is John DuBell, Berkowitz and Meyer. We are located in St. Petersburg, Florida. If you're a consumer out there that's receiving any kind of collection calls or automated robotic calls, our firm's number is 727-344-0123. And also my email, if you want to reach me by email, is John@BerkMeyer.com. So it's John@BerkMeyer.com.
Excellent. I think you've given us great information. I'll have you back at some point in the future because I know you've got to have a lot of stories on this kind of stuff. And I'm sure you calm a lot of people down too.
Absolutely. That's my job.
Yep. Well, thanks again, John. I appreciate it. And join us next week on The World of Lori Zook.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
You're welcome, John. Thank you.